Welcome. You're listening to Ask the CIO, brought to you by CenturyLink. And now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Greg Garcia, the director of the Army IT Agency. Greg, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Thanks for having us here today. I appreciate the visit.
All right, this is exciting. This is actually now your one-year anniversary as being the director of the Army IT Agency. Give me a sense, how's the transition going? I think your last job, you worked in strategic communications. So is that much of a learning curve, or is it kind of right in your wheelhouse?
I had the great pleasure of being the deputy director for U.S. Forces Iraq, J-9, in Iraq, pretty much of all 11, and did work some time with the Air Force CIO. So the importance of what we do in the IT mission space is something that I've dealt with many times in my career. It's kind of great to be in an ITA. It's another great opportunity to work with great soldiers, civilians, and contractors. And certainly they have the brilliance and excellence in doing great mission support. It's also an environment that we're tested every day, which I really love the doing part. ITAs in, as we like to say, the bite in the fight. That's B-Y-T-E in the fight. We support everybody in the Pentagon, and it's a challenge and exciting opportunity to do that every single day with every single member in the building and do the great things that we do in ITA. So transition has been fairly straightforward. We're a service provider dedicated to their mission support, and that's what we focus on.
Now, you said you did a little bit of work with the Air Force CIO previously. What did you do for them?
So I spent 28 years in the Air Force. I started in logistics, program management, information defense, and my time right before I came to the Army, I spent about 6 months with the Air Force CIO doing some enterprise contracting, data consolidation strategies, some application rationalization activities, and really helped me prepare for what we're going to do in the joint environment, which is really ITA's main mission space.
How did you come to ITA? Did you apply and the job just, you won that job?
It's pretty awesome. I survived Iraq. That's the first requisite to come back.
And congratulations,
yes,
by the way.
Thank you. My family appreciated that. The thing, I met Mr. Krieger, who's the deputy CIO for the Army, through our great efforts on enterprise consolidation. One thing that we've learned in the DoD is it not only important to do service consolidation, but across service consolidation. So we were working with the Army when I was in the Air Force and DISA on the Microsoft Enterprise License Agreement as a broader approach than our individual ELAs or Enterprise License Agreements to a almost tri-department between the Army, Air Force, and DISA. And that really helped us realize the benefits of even greater enterprise approaches. And I got to know many in the Army, and my time in Iraq as primarily being an Army mission got to be known in that community. And again, I love the ITA is the doing organization. And that was kind of a fit that Mr. Krieger, the deputy CIO, noticed and was thankful for, and had a weak moment and selected me.
Well, it doesn't sound like it was a weak moment. You mentioned a couple times you love the doing. So are you the type of guy that gets the hands dirty? You love the operational piece versus the strategic piece? Though, obviously, being the director of an organization, there's always the strategy piece you got to think about.
Absolutely. It's important to express to people that you're committed to their mission success. And that mission success is dependent on action, not on planning. You know, in the IT world, if you're planning beyond more than 3 or 4 years, you're kind of really guessing more than planning. So really, we're kind of focused on 3 years into the latest second, and how do we enable them to be successful in their mission challenge? And what's great about ITA is that's really a joint mission. So everybody that's in the building depends on ITA for transport, storage, a lot of particulars that allows us to be enablers of their mission success. I remember sitting when I was with the Air Force in the CIO's office, we're on the way to go brief the Hill on our data center consolidation strategy. And, you know, if the computer's not letting you print out your PowerPoint briefing, it makes a difference. You know, 1 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half an hour is really a significant delay in our mission set in the building. So as a director of ITA now, I get about a 17-second delay between someone's concern and someone calling me. So that's kind of exciting, because that's kind of the pace that I grew up with.
Well, let's jump into some of those action items, those areas that you're a doer. Now, the last time I had the director of the ITA on my show was 2010, so obviously it's several years ago, but there's a lot of priorities at the time that they were focused on. So let's talk about some of those priorities. One of them was moving toward a virtualized server environment. Give us an update. What's the status of that effort, and what kind of benefits are both ITA and its customers receiving?
Really, ITA's been focused on three main thrusts: provide quality, maximize effectiveness, and deliver best value. And that's really kind of been the central theme that's been going on the last several years between our last conversation with you. And really, the area of virtualization is one area that is sort of the synergy sweet spot between those three things. Certainly you can be effective, certainly you can be efficient, but you got to actually have quality and a value proposition that's acceptable. So we're in the ITA have a significant data server mission. Right now, we're about 70% of our servers are virtualized currently. And one of the things that we recognize is the benefit of virtualization of the desktop. So we've partnered with a great partner, General Bowman, and the joint staff on developing, piloting, and moving into production a virtual desktop infrastructure. We've tried to do a multi-tenant infrastructure that allows joint staff to manage an image and allows HQDA, ITA to manage an image while leveraging the synergy between the two organizations. It's certainly been a learning opportunity. We've discovered a lot of how to make that efficient. You know, one thing critical is profile unity about having the ability of a teammate, a mission partner, to be able to log on from any point in the network and having his or her desktop appear with their files and access to their information. So we've actually done this over probably the last 4 months and really have demonstrated the viability of a virtual desktop infrastructure within the Pentagon area. I think we're on the verge of proving to joint staff that this is ready for production, and we look for that production planning to occur here in the next several weeks with implementation the following months. And that would be the entire joint staff here in the Washington area.
And when you say the entire joint staff, let's be clear, is that the entire Pentagon or just
a joint staff organization?
Exactly. So just a part of that Pentagon.
Right.
If they went to meet with someone in the Navy, would they be able to log on there, or is that a different network?
So that's a different network, a different enterprise. And really that's the end goal is how do we think about, I always like to ask, what is your E? What is your enterprise? There are lots of people that define that different ways. And I think for us, building an enterprise for the joint staff that lets the joint staff south in Hampton Roads and the joint staff north in the Pentagon, great harmony between the two locations and who their interactions with. And does that expand to OSD? Does that expand to other services? That's certainly something we can look for. Again, that's why we build it as a multi-tenant infrastructure. So each organization could manage their image in a consolidated, vibrant, robust infrastructure to allow them that flexibility in the future.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. I want to talk more about this VDI infrastructure. But first, you've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Greg Garcia, the director of the Army IT Agency.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Greg Garcia, the director of the Army IT Agency. Now, Greg, before break, we were talking about your virtual desktop infrastructure, VDI environment. Two questions that come to mind. Let me give you the first one. How's that going to work? Because I've heard of like VDI on a stick where you have to take your thumb drive, which I know is maybe a dirty word in DOD to some extent.
Absolutely banned.
Exactly. So it's not going to be on a thumb drive, so how's it going to work?
How we're approaching our VDI, again, virtual desktop infrastructure, is through endpoints that are very zero-client, thin-client based. And as for many of those that are very technical, astute in this business, it's one way to manage it that reduces the cost and complexity of what you do with the end user. Right now, I have a little cube on my desk that basically has the network connection and outlet for the keyboard and outlet for the CAC reader and speakers. And that's kind of it. All the intelligence is in the cloud, which offers several key capabilities. Time to patch, time to provision. You know, you do that once on the server and, you know, the 200, 2,000, 20,000 people that touch that server get it instantaneously. As you know, one of our other missions is the support of the headquarters, Department of Army, staff in the Pentagon, and we have to run around and touch machines. We were just migrating to Win 7, and there are some touch labor after the automated migration that you have to do. And the key thing about a VDI infrastructure is that you could significantly reduce the cost and significantly increase the time to deliver those capabilities. So we're pretty excited about that. We're not doing the, you know, desktop on a stick that you just can plug into any computer. We actually have specific endpoints and that you can log on to any of those endpoints with your credentials and get into the network.
I know that you said this is just in the piloting stage, but is this something where if you have a laptop, the government furnished laptop, and you're at a conference, at a meeting outside, can you VPN into that VDI, which a lot of Vs?
Yeah, that's what we're working on. And that's the big part of Profile Unity is how do you make this a mobile experience? If someone is provisioned with a laptop, can they get in through a VPN and other technical means to get to their information? And that's absolutely what we're looking at. As you know, there's a big push for mobility in telework, in if we were to travel, those kind of things. So that's one of the key tenets of the assessment is to make that a seamless experience for people that travel out and about.
So I imagine that, as you said, this is something that could go into production maybe later this year. That would be part of that discussion.
Yes. And that I think we're able to, again, the key tenets of a successful solution is user acceptance, technical throughput. That's an experience that is acceptable and access to the data. And we're right now, I think, at the well over the midway point of demonstrating that. We've worked through several of the provisioning issues, and I think we really have joint staff on board to move into production, again, for joint staff north here in the Pentagon region. And right behind that is possibly a pilot for our headquarters, Department of Army folks in the building to allow them to get the effectiveness and efficiencies of a VDI structure for the headquarters Army folks.
So I'm going to give you the fair warning before I ask the question. A lot of vendors listen to my show. You can put some of the things to rest for them. Any kind of RFP solicitation coming from this, or are you unsure yet?
I believe there will be an acquisition. We're working on the bill of materials currently for the joint staff production implementation. And then I think what we'll have to do is do the pilot continuance for the headquarters Department Army folks. And that would be perhaps if they are attuned to implementation, something that would follow in the probably late fourth quarter.
All right. Well, now when you get all those calls from those folks in the industry, you can blame me.
I'll send them to you.
Exactly. And then I'll send them to your press person, Mike. One of the things that you guys have been working on at ITA over the last few years is a new business model and how you guys are organized around both services, but not around functions as much. Give me a sense of that effort. I remember seeing something recently on your website about the business administration directorate success, increasing visibility on the purchases received list accounting, which you'll have to explain to me what that is.
Let's put this in context in a bit, in the sense that the Department of Army, along with the Department of Defense, has committed to being transparent and audit ready in all our transactions. As you know, there's a federal mandate to be audit ready by 2017, and the Department of Defense has accelerated that to begin those first transactions here this year, and with a look to be some level of audit ready for 2014. And certainly the administrative assistant in the Department of Army, which we're a part of, is really leaning forward in the saddle to move and be transparent. You know, we have implemented an ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning System, within the Army for our financials. That helps bring some transparency because you have to get the transactions right. What we're trying to do is share with our customers exactly when they procure something, what that money goes to. So we began to build on our website for products and services an ability for a customer to get a price quote. And then when they do get a price quote, how do we move that through the process for implementation? We call it really how do you get a rough order of magnitude for a job that you're going to do. And one of the sayings I have is, you know, tell them what you're going to do and do what you told them. And how do we give that information to our customers to know that they got value out of what they spent money for? And where we can return money, we should. And where we need to ask for more money, we should clearly explain why.
Basically, so if I can just understand this a little better, when you talk about this business administration directorate, one of the things they're doing is helping people understand what they got for the money, but as well as they understand how the money was spent.
Yeah, I think one thing I'll add into that discussion is really my philosophy for ITA is not only do we want to be an excellent service provider, but we also want to be an excellent service broker. We have some great partners, DISA, the Army Enterprise Acquisition Organizations, various other acquisition organizations across the DoD. So what I've instilled is that we should find the best value for our warfighting customers, not just an ITA solution. So we have great friends in DISA. We work with them a lot. We have great friends in the Pentagon area, CIO Governance Council, where we work with all members. And we really try to vet a solution that is best value to folks, not just an ITA contrived solution or one that we derive or one that we're the central part of, but we try to look at all solutions and figure out what's the best value on the mission requirement.
All right. Well, we've talked a lot about your older priorities. Let's start looking forward to your new priorities. But first, we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we'll jump right in. You gave us a little bit of a heads up. You are listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Greg Garcia, the director of the Army IT Agency.
The secret to being successful is never slowing down. Your agency's mission doesn't have a pause button. And with CenturyLink as your trusted technology partner, you don't have to slow down. Their visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions are backed by dedicated responsive support. Pause button not included. To learn more about how CenturyLink keeps you up and rolling 24/7, 365, visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Greg Garcia, the director of the Army IT Agency. Now, Greg, for the last part of the show here, we've been talking about your old priorities. You gave us a little bit of a heads up on some new ones like the VDI. But let's look forward now. What are you going to work on over the next 6 or 9 months?
Our first and number one priority is to be a trusted mission partner for our customers. The issue of trust, the understanding of their mission, doing what we say we're going to do is one of the primary tenets of a great partnership that we want to establish with all our users. That also applies to our contractor base and our employees and those that are affected by our services. So that's really what we want to focus on. We're building that know what you're to do, know how you're doing it, and know how you be better every single day. You know, we're not perfect in many of the things we do, but we're going to get better every single day. And I think we've made great progress over the last year. We've implemented a new governance structure. We've engaged with our customers differently. We've established customer account managers that we're hoping to interact directly with their base of customers to tell them exactly what's going on in ITA, where their status is on their initiatives, their service, and their activities. We're trying to streamline processes, make them more effective. Just to highlight a few, we had an account provisioning process that was taking several days. We've gotten down to hours. To be responsive to that customer, to understand that customer has critical mission functions that they have to do, and to be an enabler of that. I'll talk about three big rocks that we're really focused on is quality end-to-end customer experience. You know, we all know what bad IT is like. We want to be the example of what right is like. We did a recent activity at the start of this year on an end-to-end customer experience where we actually instrumented from the desktop through the infrastructure and back activities so they could see specific empirical evidence of performance and the qualitative experience. That helped us a lot to improve. We actually got to talk to our vendors about steps to improve and actually OEMs of systems that we use to help them understand the concerns that we had. Second big thrust is, again, we've talked briefly about cost performance. As you know, we're going through some financially difficult times and our budgets are not on the increase, they're on the decline, and we have to figure out what's the most important thing to do with the limited resources that we have and how to give that taxpayer the best return on investment. As you know, I continue to be sort of dismayed about the perception of the federal workforce. I can guarantee you those in ITA are focused on being value-oriented and that the cost performance they provide is an important central element for national security and for our great taxpayer. And the third one I'll talk about briefly is securing and strengthening our information assurance and cybersecurity. As you know, recently the number one threat was listed as insecurity of cyber, and we're really kind of in the middle of that with being the pin cert in the Pentagon, being the transport provider to the 46,000 people in our building. And I think we do a very robust job in taking cybersecurity and the challenges and risks that we face very seriously. I serve as a designated approval authority for many systems, and we have increased our due diligence to make sure that we assess, understand the risk, and take the required due diligence and prudence to make sure that we can meet mission and be as secure as possible. So really the challenge that we face is this is all being done under some really significant challenges. I've talked briefly about financial challenges. We have sort of a forthcoming furlough, as you all read in the public press about our forthcoming furloughs in the DoD. So that will add to the complexity and challenge. So imagine having to run a business with 20% of your civilian workforce not being allowed to come to work and do the great things they do. So we're going to work through these challenges together. We're going to work through these to get the best value that we can. But that's our focus for the next coming months.
All right, a lot to follow up on. Let me go all the way back to the beginning a little bit. And you talked a little bit about making sure you're good mission partners. And part of that is new governance structure, new account managers. How did you break down that account management setup? Do you have, not silos, because I know that can be a dirty word, but do you have people who focus on data centers and people who focus on applications, or how do you break it down?
Yeah, we looked at it through the customer lens. Our customer account representatives are actually assigned to a customer base. And that customer account manager, or CAM as we call them, their sole job is to understand their customer requirements and to interface and interact with all aspects within ITA to make sure that customer's requirement is understood, actioned, and is meeting their expectations. I had a great mentor in a gentleman named Lieutenant General Ted Bowles that talked about expectation management agreements. Not service level agreements, not memorandums of agreements, but expectation management agreements. I find that when there is usually a disagreement about a level of service, it's a missed expectation that's the root of the issue, where someone would say, I thought you were going to do this, or I thought you were going to do that. So we really want to manage our customers' base expectations to understand their mission, understand their expectations, document those. And those CAMs every single day wake up to worry about how they support that customer. So that's really the nexus that we leverage for that customer account representative to talk to operations, to engineering, to enterprise management, to our business administration, to our CTO, and to our enterprise information management assurance folks. So that's kind of, we put the heart of our customer at the center of our business model to make sure they're the focus.
You talk about expectation management agreement, not an SLA. Have you put those in place, and how are they different than an SLA?
I have. I'm a little bit avant-garde. You certainly have to talk about what your service levels are, but what is important in an EMA, as I like to call them, expectation management agreement, is what you're not going to do. We had one great opportunity to support our great Air Force brethren on hosting a system that they were going to use Air Force-wide. That was really kind of not necessarily our primary mission, but we had a mission to meet. We were only the only IT organization positioned to help them. So really we wanted to talk about what we're going to do and what they're going to do and what they're not going to do and what we're not going to do. Really, we signaled to them that this is not a long-term solution, that we want to get them to our great partners in DISA or to an Air Force hosting facility. And really, is it setting those expectations out of both near-term, long-term, and who's going to touch what part of the system and those kind of things, which really makes it documented again. And so when we have a discussion 3 months later, 6 months later, it isn't, well, I thought you were going to do something.
Because on a service level agreement, the idea is, well, we'll keep your systems running for 9.9999 times. And and if something breaks down, we'll fix it within 2 hours. And so it's really the changing from, if you will, you hear this a lot, outcome and output, that's that difference. Yeah. Is that a little bit?
I'll say you absolutely have to share those service level agreements with people. They need to have the right expectations on what you're going to provide. But I found a lot of times that's going to be insufficient when you get into any kind of problem resolution, this sense of if money gets tied, if business practices get changed, is how do you respond to that? And how do you keep a really, it's more of a, I'll use the word marriage of a partner versus just a simple agreement, is that you really want to make sure that they're successful, not just, hey, it's not in the agreement, so I'm not going to do it. So we try to articulate those things that are important to both ends of that relationship to be clear and precise.
In that same vein, you talk about cost performance as well. And obviously you did some performance metrics. Can you go into more details in terms of how you were able to look at that desktop to infrastructure and back and show that performance mm-hmm. metrics? Because I think every agency is facing very similar challenges of trying to prove and demonstrate performance.
I have an affinity for empirical data. When you talk to people, you can't talk about what I think or I believe. You got to talk about what you know, because this is a critical business that we're in, especially in the Pentagon, and it's a significant investment business. So when you talk about investing millions of dollars, you really need to understand what you're getting for that money that's invested. So in our end-to-end assessment, what we did is, again, looked at we're a predominantly Microsoft fielded organization. What is the response for Internet Explorer? What's the response for Win7? What's the response for getting through the DISA internet access points? What is the interplay within long distance, short distance? And then to begin to create that empirical data that says, where are the bottlenecks? And then that will help drive your investment strategy. One of the things that we really want to do is this, not only lifecycle management planning, but the risk management planning. Where am I taking risk with the state of my equipment? What is sort of state of the art? What is sort of in the middle? What's on the legacy part, and how do I accept risk or not accept risk as we move to invest those precise and short dollars to get us the biggest return on our capabilities.
Is this something you foresee doing more and more for your customers, or was this more of a test, a pilot set? Could we do it, and does it make a difference?
I think it's going to be a long-term strategy. I think anybody that's run IT knows that it's a living and breathing beast. It's never done. You feel you do have configuration control, but the world of IT is ever shifting and ever dynamic. When you don't have control of every single box, if you're a service provider and someone's allowed to add or take away from the network, it goes left and right, and you have to continuously assess the performance of that beast. One of our strategic goals we're looking at is to have real-time reporting on every single one of our services. I would rather call the CIO of the Air Force and tell them your system's going to go down in 8 minutes versus him calling me half an hour later and says, oh, by the way, I can't reach out to anybody in the world. I want to be predictive in our ability to tell service trends. We were just talking today about we should know more about our customers' services than they should by observing the delivery of those services. We should tell them, we understand there's a problem. You'll probably see some latency. We are working it. And really, one of the things I love about the Army culture is our after-action report culture in the Army, where we really want to understand root cause to get down to what do we improve to make this better for tomorrow. And that's a great culture thing that the Army brings to every discipline. And we've really applied that into the IT domain and the defense domain to say, how do we get that to be stronger next time we have the same circumstances?
All right, very good. Sounds like we could talk a lot longer, but unfortunately, we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Greg Garcia, the director of the Army IT Agency. Greg, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Thanks so much for having us. I appreciate our time.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This show has been sponsored by CenturyLink. If you missed any portion of the show, you can hear it in its entirety on demand at federalnewsradio.com.